Welcome back, gentlemen.
All right, all right.
Awesome. Good to see everybody again. I was actually trying to figure out, Mark, when we were talking, is this your fifth? Sixth?
Fifth or sixth? I'll have to go back.
I stopped counting on you guys. we're double digits now, no?
It's got to be
double
digits. I sleep here now.
Yeah, basically. Well, welcome back. It's good to see you again,
Mark. Yeah, we're doing a TNT segment.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. So we're going to talk about a little bit of the mentality that goes into the mind of the construction worker.
There might be a little bit of construction.
A little bit of construction.
Because there's a connection, right?
With
two of them. I think so. I think that what you do on, I guess, the trowel is connected still with how you do on the trowel.
I think the way I kind of look at it is what I do on the trowel and what I do on my site reflects a lot into my life.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's like I'm on site, I'm a tradesman or what I consider like a journeyman. But like as I'm walking down the street, I'm still a journeyman.
Yeah.
Like as I drive my truck, I'm still a journeyman. As I'm a dad, I'm still a journeyman, that type of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, what I like about these conversations, specifically the TNT conversations, is that they're connecting with tradespeople because they're all going through this.
Yeah.
Whether they're questioning it or actually addressing it and communicating with other people when they get over the stigma of having this conversation. Because we get it. It's not about the length of the 2x4, the tape measure. It's not about mixing the mortar. It's not about any of that. It's about the person, the trades.
Yeah,
person,
exactly. Right? And like, obviously, like what's going to translate from that is like the person's mentality towards things.
Yes.
You know, so like,
it's only going to help you.
Exactly. And I think like if people were just a little bit more in tune with them a little bit, just like, I'm not talking about doing like deep, deep work, like meditative state stuff, but just like maybe looked around a little bit more, I think they'd see a lot more and maybe they'd have maybe gratitude or learn some skills or something along those types of lines. So
introspective work is what I like to refer to it.
Yeah.
And one of the primary ones that really segues well in what Mark just shared with us is core values, getting in touch with your core values. And if you live and work via your core values, you're that much in a better position to enjoy your life and enjoy the fruits of your hard work.
So on that note, everybody want to introduce, you want to start, Gianluca?
Gianluca Pascale, head curator for the Constructors Guild, a community for construction professionals in the GTA, soon to be Canada, US, and the world.
Global. Mark?
Mark Fraser, Craigmore Construction. Just a mason.
Not just a mason. No,
you know, that kills me. It's not just a mason. There's so much more.
Plug in about the journeyman. I really like what you shared before we went live because it's beautiful.
Yeah, So the way I kind of view it is there was this thing. It's a very old way of looking at the trade. So what used to happen is you used to apprentice back in like medieval times. So you would actually sleep on the floor of like the blacksmith shop or like in the like mason's shop or something like that. And you'd be unfortunately abused like very, very heavily. But then after a while through your apprenticeship, you would basically then they'd like walk you out the door when you finally could like create either like your masterpiece. I think you were talking about creating a masterpiece, that carpenter that you had from Notre Dame.
Yeah, exactly. That's so your
like,
goal, right?
Yeah, so in Europe, they do like a masterpiece. Here, they do like levels, and if you can show certain skills.
How much of the industry here in North America, specifically in Canada, do you think they're aware of that? That you should be striving for that masterpiece kind of project?
I still think that there's a large portion of that because a lot of the stonemasons I run into tend to be European-driven. So it's there.
Yeah.
Like I actually recently just took up stone carving with this guy, Richard Bessel. He worked on the Wells Cathedral. He's got such a great story. I don't want to share it all here, but
how old is he?
He's 56.
Okay, so he's still good.
But he's been, like, he tells me, like, he's done miles of, like, things that take me hours take him minutes. Mm. He's just so good with his tools. And I just watching him work, it's like art. It really is like art. Like you just see him and his approach and the way he drives line.
Online. Like we follow the same person. Yeah. And where is he? Is he in France?
Who? Richard?
The stone carver.
Oh,
what's his name? The kid. It's like he's a little bit younger than you. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember.
I know a lot of people when I get talking about it, they're like, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. But then I'm also following guys either in the UK that are doing the slate roofs.
Yeah.
Like it's just that whole trades artisan kind of mentality of that woodworking, so hands on.
So the past way that they used to do it is that apprentice would then create his masterpiece. It would get marked down by the tradesman who was in that village, and then what that guy would do is he would then leave. He would leave his area, and he would go on a journey, and hence the name journey man. And then when he went to the next town over, he would hang a shingle or a mark or something along those lines. And then that would show like there is a mason here who has achieved X that can do X type of work now. And then he would take on an apprentice, and then that's how they sort of did that. And then as they got bigger into cities and stuff like that, that's how guilds formed, because then you had like a whole master, like that's again, master masonry, and then, you know, just a little history.
But I guess right now the concern is that a lot of these journeymen or women, they're leaving for the dollar.
I think that comes from a very like fixed mindset type of thing. Yeah, I agree. You know, like I think.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just feel that, and this is an observation, and I'm, you know, it's open for debate, but my observation is that the granularity and the history of journeyman, journeywoman, or just the artisan craft of tradespeople is not as well known in North America, Canada specifically, and then we can branch off that.
I wouldn't say it's well known. I don't think it's respected.
Well, I can concur to respected, 100%. I just feel that it's not as well known. I like the word. Add the word as, not totally off topic. I'm going to share a quick story with you as it relates to just education in general, as it, starting here in Ontario. Have friends of mine that left Ontario to go to Florida. Their daughter, when they got there, they had to get a tutor for her for grade 10 for one full year in order to bring her up to speed with the education system in Florida. Okay, it gets better. I have a friend, my family in Italy, we have a place in one of our neighbors two doors down. She sent her son on a student exchange program in Texas in the U.S. The young lad spent a full year, ironically, I think in grade 10 as well, grade 10 or 11, full year in Texas. By the time he went to Italy, he had to forego all of his summer and do 3 months of summer school in order to bring himself up to snuff with the education in Italy. So I share that only because I wanted to kind of segue that and tie it into
connected.
Yeah, the granularity, the formality, the history of the artisanship, now going back into construction, or the education of which there's a big disconnect.
So hang on, Jonathan, introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you, thanks, guys. Jonathan Sinelli, people first, leadership. Coaching, speaking, education, changing the industry, folks. That's what we're here for. That's what we're talking about. Thanks for pivoting back to me.
No, because I want everybody to know. We also check out your podcast as well, too, because you're doing it out there and you're getting the word and you're getting some interesting guests. And I keep bumping into them as well, too. And we all are on the same boat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's as simple as that.
It's really nice these platforms to have these discussions.
Yeah.
Because I hope that it helps people. Like, that's kind of why we're all here, is because we're hoping that even if it helps one person.
It starts with one. Yeah,
like, look, if we're here to be of service, if we're not going to share what we know, then shame on us.
Yeah.
So this is as a result of Mark, you reaching out to me because you've been a listener of the show, and especially these TNT shows, and talking about, today we want to talk about that mindset. A lot of ideas that you were bringing in where it's like the tradesperson first and trying to figure out how you connect that to the trades skills.
I think so. I read a lot. I do. I picked it up because I was sick and tired of scrolling my phone and just doom scrolling. So I decided to pick that up. So I've been diving in a little bit into like psychology and stuff like that. And I don't want to seem too like overbearing, but I've just been sort of taking the stuff that I've read and sort of moving it more towards like, okay, how does this reflect in my journey? How does this reflect in my life as a young tradesman? And so I noticed little things like, for example, when you brought up about the education system and stuff like that, I'm reading this book right now called Mindset, and it has these two concepts where there's a fixed mindset and then there's a growth mindset. I think a lot of our education system is based around a fixed mindset because there's this, like, you walk in day one, this is how we do it. There's a curriculum that you have to follow as a teacher. And then I think that translates all the way down into, you know, trade schooling, post-secondary, et cetera, and it's all part of a system. And then when you move through the system in a certain way and they fit you into that box, you come out on the other end and then they give you a diploma and then it's like, okay, now you're ready to go into the world. The difference is when you go into the world, it's not a controlled environment anymore. It's a very ever-changing, there's problem solving and there's skills that like you might not know. A really quick like example of this is like when I was in high school, I didn't do very well with calculus and algebra and stuff like that because that's just not how my brain works. But you give me a ratio, I can figure that out. And then masonry, 3 to 1, 1:6. Yeah. These are the mortar ratios that you have to do. When you're doing like mortar sampling, you have to know what X is. So I had to know algebra. It's the way that they taught it and the way that I get to those sort of conclusions. And I think like as trades people, I think there's a uniqueness. And the thing is, you need to be given the tools to learn the way that you do. And I think a lot of the creativity dies from a fixed mindset and from that curriculum.
I agree.
And that's just, I mean.
And I know off mic before we got started, we were talking about this is how it is. This is how it's always been. This is how it's always going to be.
And that's what you have to work with, a fixed mindset.
Right?
And let me take it one step forward and then relate it to like where I am, because I'm 36, getting on with my trade career. But realistically, it's like when I was coming up and I was looking at the guys before me, the journeymen, this is how we do it. It's always been done this way. Don't think of doing it any other way.
How many times do we hear this on job sites?
Oh my God.
Is it every day? Probably morning, noon, lunch.
Don't tell me how to do my job. I've been doing it for 20, 30 years. This is how it's always been done.
Shut up and do it.
Like, yeah.
And then when there's lack of innovation and enthusiasm declines, who's to blame on that?
Well, just think about the structures that were built way before, generations back. Do you think they had that same fixed mindset when they were building those things? The tradespeople there, the artisans there, that
so
they didn't have that.
So the two types of construction that it was like given to me, it was when the Romans created the arches, that was like, oh my God, because everything before that was Greek and it was all post and beam. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to look at that, be innovative enough. I don't know if it was Galileo or Aristotle or somebody like that. And they went, hey, what if we span an arch? And then they had to figure that out. You know what I mean? And it was that innovation that brought forth other innovation, that brought forth other free thinkers. And like a lot of ancient civilizations were productive because of innovation. So we're at a point now where it's like, there's a lot of technology like AI is coming. There's like, you know, the Fraco. I don't know if you've seen the exoskeleton. I think that thing's really cool. It's like a battery operated exoskeleton.
It puts
stresses on your body. And like, it's so funny to see like some of the comments on these things where I look at it and I go, yeah, that's sick. And guys are like, your hands are soft, boy. And it's like, it's that.
See, here's my concern with that. And first of all, these shows, I just love where they're going to go. We have our notes and shit like that. My concern with that is that, especially the difficult trades that require that endoskeleton, whatever it is that going to force people to work longer, well past their years? I personally don't like seeing 60-plus-year-old masonry roofers, the hard trades, the hardscaper, the concrete guys.
So I am of the opinion that no, it's not going to force them to work longer. It's just going to make them that much more healthier by the time they come to retirement.
It's not going to make it more enjoyable too, right? Because
it's hard, man. And I just, the utmost respect for everybody in the industry, but just to point the finger at Mark, you know, being a mason, my father's a mason by trade, so automatically there was a connection there. And I know for a fact because I've worked the line. I know how hard it is, but I also know that if you're not doing it right, I know how quickly you can beat yourself up. And beating yourself up, meaning like the damage that you're doing to your body, it's some of it, or most of it is irreversible, right? That's what these are lessons that need to be passed down by way of knowledge transfer. Even if you're 36 or I'm 52 or you're 40, you know, everybody's got something to give to someone either younger or even older. Let's not forget that mentorship or knowledge transfer goes both ways. If I may, real quick, I want to just backtrack with regards to the education and piggyback on what Mark shared earlier about, you know, the education or the mindsets of the education offering it only in fixed. I concur. I agree 100%. And I want to say that is also one of the primary reasons why it's not the education system is not recognizing entrepreneurial mindsets.
No.
Everybody's pigeonholed into the same thing.
You have to almost break out of a shell and then not be understood by your peers.
You guys have children, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. This is a real... Sorry, go ahead.
So I was just curious, right? The older children, are they talking positively about the formal educational system?
Can I share...
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Because I... couldn't agree with you more. Our education system is designed so that you go, you fall susceptible to the system, you exit the education system, and you go work for somebody and you're controlled, and you're, and we can go down that route. To answer your question, we have a 10-year-old boy at home. This is real. Came 2 weeks ago. We're having dinner. And he said, what do I need school for?
He actually asked that at 10 years.
Yeah. What do I need school for, Dad? He's like, he says, don't answer. He says, everything you tell me, I have an answer. Math, calculator. Spelling, I got Alexa. Right? And science, I got YouTube. He's going down every little thing. And it was a great conversation because I was able to challenge him. Mm-hmm. And to a certain regard, he's not wrong. Right? I said, Christian, I get it, buddy. And you do learn some of the things that in school that are non-transferable, whether that be system structures,
how you
work.
What about trade education, though?
Right?
Skills being taught. Do we go formal or do we go on the site by an individual? Which is better? I'm just curious.
Not. I'm going to tell you the way I learned was on site.
But I think it's...
And nothing beats it.
You were on site. No, you went to... No, you did both.
Yep.
You did both.
Yeah, I did both.
But you... Do you feel that you did both and it was valuable that you did both?
Well, the thing is, the way that my school was structured was I always had shop. I always had shop. So I always had the academics and then the practical. Mm-hmm. I always had it. Even when I was in high school, I was like one of the last years where we actually
still
had
to
shop. Because
my mind went right there.
Because and the reason why I enjoyed and I looked forward to shop because it was a way for me to get that energy out, like from the first two subjects of just sitting and just being
sort of numb. So
where
are
the kids
today displacing that energy?
Well, I think what's happening is they're putting it into their iPads and their phones.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that they're looking...
Escapism?
Yeah. Like they're... The thing that I find with... I'm trying not to hate too much on screens, but it's like I'm finding that what the screen is doing to you, or the black mirror, as I refer to. Yeah. you've never seen that. You've never seen that show.
I don't watch that show.
It's black mirror.
Okay. Yeah, right? I get it. Makes sense.
Because it's off, it totally, right? And it's reflecting sense back at you anyways.
Okay.
So the black mirror, and this is something that I even noticed with my own kids, is when my kids say I'm bored, I'm like, good. And we are slowly getting the iPad. Like when we go for a drive up to my cottage and stuff like that, we won't have the iPad in the car because we want them to look out the window
but
and see the world.
But you're single-digit parenting. Am I wrong on that one?
What do you mean?
I'm just assuming that most parents...
Percentage-wise,
that you're not... The iPads are not on the vehicle. When mm-hmm. I was a kid, I remember all of us stuck in the car, station wagon, two of us in the back, completely illegal if there was ever an accident. And we'd be projectiles at that point, right? But I mean, like, that's what we did. But today's parent, I think, is like iPad on the back of the headrest on every third row. Like, it's just insane.
They're sold in vehicles that way now, right?
Because I think there's something to be said about, I think a lot of people are just kind of at their wit's end. I think a lot of people aren't tracking that mental state of how they actually are. That's where the fixed mindset comes in. But I think it also harbors like a lot of other things, and it displaces it. Like how it's so easy to pick up your phone and doom scroll for like an hour. It's so easy. And there's so much research of like dopamine hitting and like just the swiping and the brain to like finger connection.
What are we
and
looking
all that
for?
It's quick entertainment. That's what it is.
We're just looking for a fix.
No, we're looking for certainty. So we're looking for significance,
validation.
Yeah. You know, and those are some of the human needs. And unfortunately, human needs through the digital world, it's not working.
But how many
being
people
sold a lie?
But the question I have is, how many people know what their human needs actually are?
Very little.
How many people ask? How many people don't even know what they're doing when they're doing this?
So imagine if we started teaching that air quote stuff in high school or in grade school.
I
was taught about basic needs in high school. I remember that. I was grade 9 or 10. I don't know if it still is.
It's not.
No.
Yeah.
I'm older. I'm 12 years older than you are.
It just never hit the curriculum. Yeah. Like for us, it was more important for them to teach us about parabolic equations than it was taxes. Like X and Y axis and stuff like that. And Texas Instrument calculators. Like that's what they taught us.
So you guys as a parent right now, what's missing from the formal education?
I think it's that. So I kind of dove into this a little bit, like reading this mindset book. So I think what happens is, so first of all, the education system, and I mean, fight me on this if you want. The education system was created by factories to create good workers. Yeah, that's what it was. That was the box they started
exactly
with, right?
What it is.
So then what happened is they haven't really evolved that model. There's still a curriculum.
Over a century they haven't.
Yeah, they haven't evolved that model. And here's the thing that's even the worst kicker. So when they find somebody who has a growth mindset or a strength towards like maths or sciences or something like that, what they do is they validate them, then they put them in a class, they isolate them, and then what they do is give them problems for them to solve that rely on those strengths. When I'm reading this mindset book, they actually say that that is the worst thing you can do to somebody with a growth mindset. The best thing you can do is actually put them where they're weakest and let them effort and use that knowledge that they have that's advanced to problem solve around those situations. Because the thing is, it's better to have effort through people rather than just validate them and then play on their strengths. You see this throughout sports, like naturals and stuff like that. There's so many naturals. That guy Bean, who was in Moneyball, he was like he was seen as like top tier, right? But then when he got there, you know, and he struck out, his mentality couldn't take it. Right. And then what? And then he crumbled. And then he didn't become more than what he was.
But that's what's happening to today's tradesperson.
I think that's what's happening. I think what's happening is it's the education, and then the people go into the trades,
as a stigma.
No. What happens is I think they have a fixed mindset.
Okay.
And then they go forward, right? And then let's say they want to pursue trade, or let's say they want to pursue anything. They haven't harbored their growth mindset. So they're going into a fixed mindset environment with fixed mindset people. And then when they do run into somebody with a growth mindset, either it's the mask takes them down a couple notches, right? Or that person becomes hyper isolated, because if they were to go forward and not go with the mask, because by the way, like mass is a huge influence. Like body of people is a totally, massive influence. Totally. So it's sort of like, I think a lot of people have to, again, search on an individual level as to like where they want to grow. And we've talked about this before, where it's like a matter of like, ask, and they mentioned that in your next five moves, is like people have to ask what their why is. You know, I want to be rich. Why do you want to be rich? A lot of people actually would I want to go into the trades. Why do you want to go
into
the
trades? Are they afraid of the answer, or are they afraid of what's involved to get there?
I think that they've been sort of so complacent that they don't want to put the effort into actually searching for that.
Yeah. I'd agree. But that stems from being stifled in our current education system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it starts very early on.
Of course it does. Yeah.
And it just gets carried right throughout.
Well, here's another example. We groom our children through an education system. We pigeonhole everybody the same, give them all the same fixed mindsets, but then we don't teach them. Maybe you guys can tell me when it's starting or it has started. But up until recently, we weren't teaching them personal finance. You know, they didn't know anything.
We were
never
teaching them that.
So it started now. Somebody
barely
can correct
though,
me,
but barely. Right?
So having said that, they graduate high school. We're ready to offload them a loan to keep going into post-secondary education. But to the ones that have that spark and have that entrepreneurial mindset, that if it wasn't for the fact that they've been stifled, if they were given an opportunity to blossom and to leverage it and to learn it, they could start a business. So rather than giving them money to go to post-secondary, why don't you give them the money to start a business? That's never going to happen. But we give them all of the money in the world to go to post-secondary education.
Because
what happened to me in first year university still happens to this day. So on first day orientation, you get there. And I remember going to Laurentian University, first day orientation. I got into the atrium and there's a shit ton of people. I went, what the fuck is going on here? Then I put all 5'7" of me like on my tiptoes trying to figure out what the hell was going on. Visa, American Express, MasterCard, all there dishing out credit cards.
I know. Like, to people who don't have
it's
jobs.
It's systematic, and it's, to me, it's done on fucking purpose just to keep everybody, to keep everybody down as much as possible.
Well, the way they're able to do that is because think of the job demand. Like when you're sitting in those lecture halls and there's 1,000 students in your lecture hall, is the job market that you're studying for really a reflection of the thousand? Of
no longer.
Because I'll tell you my experience. So when I went to go write my Red Seal test, I was in a room of 40 people writing a Red Seal test. I was the only Mason that put my hand up for the bricklayers in a room of 50 people.
Yeah.
So
you're getting a job.
Yeah. So I'm getting a job.
Simple as that.
Yeah, I'm getting a job. So when people start talking about like debt, earning money and all this type of stuff, it's like, I'm sitting there raising my hand. Like you have to look at trends in the market. And again, I think it comes from that people have their heads down. They're a little bit complacent. They're not doing that introspective work, and they're just not, you know, they're just not going like outside. They're basically very narrow visioned, and they're
horse blinders.
Exactly.
So now bring him to an industry that is loaded with of unrealistic demands and expectation. The only thing you're doing is you're just pushing that individual even further down.
Exactly.
And just drowning them.
Well, let me give you a quick little analysis here, and I'll just kind of look at my notes here. So I was reading this book, Next Five Moves. You can read it if you want. It's a great book. But he brought up Maslow. So there's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is really advanced, and we don't need to get into that. But he had this thing, Maslow's theory of motivation. Okay, so it had four levels to it. So it had level one was survivability, level two was status, level three was freedom, and level four was purpose. Okay, so when you're talking about that grinding down, okay, that keeps people at level one, which is survivability. Okay, so let's extrapolate that. Let's go really deep. This is where we're going to stay for a chunk of this, because the last two, not so much. Like, you need to be advanced a little bit, but I think the first two are just a vicious cycle. And here's why. Okay, so let's say you're coming out of the educational system and now you're in high school and you've decided to pursue this career of construction. Okay. First thing is, you're going to have to beat a lot of narratives. So the narrative is, you're going to work hard for your whole life. You're going to break your body. You're going to get a pension. You're going to die. Okay. You're going to work it, and you're going to work hard, and you're going to work in the snow, and you're going to work in the rain, and you're going to do all this. And you don't want to do that, because that's really hard, and that makes survivability real shit sometimes. And by the way, I've worked in rain. I've worked in snow. I've worked in it. It's Canada, man. Like, it's going to happen. There. Yeah. It's there, right? And even if you're going to an office job, you're still going to have to walk from the subway to the office, okay? So you're going to endure something like that, okay? So the narrative is already there, and it's already anchoring you as a young kid. So let's say you beat that narrative, right? Okay. So now you come in and you're in a world where there's like a bunch of individuals and they all have this fixed mindset. This is how we do it. If you don't do it this way, you can go find another job. Okay. So there's this constant sort of, okay, I'm always fighting. And by the way, I've lived this. I've lived that, where it's like you go in every day and the old guys kind of hate that you're a young guy in the trade. It does happen in some union companies. It does happen. And so that's you kind of paying your dues, is you're kind of hated by the top down. Right. Yeah. So you kind of work. So you're every single day, you're worried about whether or not you're going to keep a job, and you're showing up on the rain days when the senior guys aren't. It happens. Right. And then you're trying to work and bust your ass and do all this. And chances are when you go fast, you end up making mistakes and then you get yelled at for that. So there's this constant just breaking down of the mental. And then now add to this where we are today. Food's expensive. Shelter's expensive. These are basic survivability needs. You have bills to pay. Okay. So that worker doesn't have time to think about the artistry or the craftsmanship or anything else, because they're just trying to eat, have shelter over their head, and survive.
You're metaphorically, keyword, killing them even before they start.
Exactly.
You're catching them at the physiological level.
Yes. And then not to mention how many people are actually going like, I'm in survivability mode right now. How many people are like, I hate my job, but I show up every day because I need to. And it's like,
a ton of those.
What does that do to a person?
Fucking scary.
What does that do to a person?
It breaks
you
down.
Over a decade.
It breaks you down. And then the other thing too is now you're trapped. And here's the thing about this pyramid, right? Just like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you can't climb a rung until you complete the first step. So there is a lot of people. And then how can you grow your mindset when everybody's pushing you down?
So you're on this endless treadmill.
Yes.
And our industry is a perfect example of that endless treadmill. With that carrot in front of them.
It is getting better. There's conversations like this happening.
Yeah.
There's also porta potties on site that are actually clean now. That I know that sounds crazy, but it's those little things of like not having to worry if the porta potty is heated, not knowing, you know, like I have somewhere to actually go to the bathroom at work. You know, safety is a big thing. So knowing that like everybody is relatively safe, they're trying not to hurt me, or, you know, like how many times did you hear about guys, you know, like nailing a hammer to the thing or nailing guys' boots down or, you know, things like that. And it's like, if they're going to do that, they might not hook you up to the lifeline either. Like, that's the other thing, you know? So there's this slow change. And I think that's going to create mental space for these growth-minded individuals to actually start flourishing. You're going to start seeing that. But again, we have to realize that if you consistently push these people down and into the ground, you're just keeping them on that survivability treadmill.
Does it take a like something very traumatic to change?
What?
Because you wake up every day, like you were just saying. You wake up, you go to work, you work, and then you retire, you pension, you die.
I really do think the solution is you have to start making, you have to think of yourself as an individual, and you need to put yourself first. And I think the best thing that I started doing like is putting money away. So don't depend on your pension to put the money away. You as an individual, you put money, 25, 50 bucks.
Just plant for the future.
Plant that seed. Believe in you. That's the other thing too. And I know it's easier said than done. You know, there's a lot of migrant workers coming over right now. There's a lot of changing, you know, those 40 towers that just went away in Toronto. There's a lot of guys that are going to be looking for work that live paycheck to paycheck and stuff like that. I also don't believe, like when I was in said union, I was just partying, man. I was a young 20-year-old making really good money, and it's great for when you're young, but you're not thinking of the future because the work, you're looking at the work and you're like, oh, it's okay. I don't need to save right now.
So at what age did you start realizing, hang on a sec, this has to change?
I started doing that.
How many years into the trade did you?
I was probably 7-8 years into the trade because my first 6 I was with the union. Then when I started my own business, it was like, oh, I got to start saving for rainy days.
Light switch for sure. I think that's important. Look, I was fortunate. I had somebody close to me. I didn't even know. It was like, hey, man, start paying yourself first. And I was like, what are you talking about? What the fuck are you talking about?
Exactly.
It's like, take 50 bucks, whatever it was. At the time, it was like ING had an account. What do they call it? Whatever ING is called now, right?
The savings account,
whatever. Right. He's like, look, man, this is a high interest savings. Put 50 bucks aside. Because we didn't think about that. We were like, oh, I'm making good money. Again, you're working. Your bills are your bills. They weren't extreme where they are today. Pay yourself first, folks. You know, that creates opportunities. I think that we should unpack a little bit how to break that narrative and support a growth mindset.
Yeah.
And I think that it starts by creating the sense of security. Of, because, holy shit, am I going to survive? Well, start by paying yourself first so that you can start to say, yeah, man.
But how do you do that in our economical times?
And that's where
it's gone bad.
And that's where it gets really bad. That's why when I look at the state that we're currently in, it's like, it's really, really sticks in my teeth when a politician, I hate to say it, sits up there and goes, you know, you should really get into construction, high yield paying jobs and all this. And it's like, but what you're not understanding is I'm going to go work hard. You're going to claw back a lot of that money. And now I'm in the survivability treadmill. So you're chewing me up and spitting me out every day. And you're not prospering me as a person.
So
go ahead.
May I offer some insight? Because here's the thing. When you take responsibility for your own life, there's nobody else to blame.
Yeah.
So how do we get there? Well, let's start by analyzing ourselves. Do I need to go buy a $3 coffee every day? Or can I take that $3, make a $1 coffee at home and put $2 away?
And
I don't know. Like I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. I'm here to simply say, what happens when you start to examine and tighten things up? Then maybe I can put $20 away.
And where I think that stems from is I think that stems from discipline.
Discipline.
And I think that discipline is what causes us to do, like lack of discipline, sorry, is what causes us to doom scroll. Lack of discipline is what causes complacency.
But does it hurt? Like, I totally agree with you guys about we're part of the collective, the masses, right? So you're one tradesperson on a job site, whether it's high rise or even a custom resi. You're surrounded by other people that might not have that same discipline. It's either, and I like that line about you either die a hero or you become the villain one
yeah.
day. So it's either you become one of them or they become you're it's not going to be them become you.
No.
It's not going
to. And that's
too difficult.
But that's the thing is like you need to work within a team but then also take care of yourself.
What do you need? A mindset buddy?
No. I don't think you need a mindset buddy. I think you need to develop the resilience like inside
first for you. It's multifaceted. One of the things that I would love to see our industry do, and first and foremost, let me just piggyback on something that you shared earlier, you know, making yourself, I'm going to reword it in the words that I use always use, is considering yourself your best and most valuable investment.
You are.
That's the first mindset. That is, to me, step one in opening the door to a growth mindset. What I'd like to see our industry adopt is we've done a great job and I've come a long way as it relates to health and safety over the last, say, 30 years. Do we still have work to do? Yes, we do. I think that that university or that school or that program is never ending because it's evolving, right? But having said that, on the health side, I would love our industry take on and embrace something that is that improves or fosters or incubates health and wellness for the individual in our industry, because you know a friend of mine shared because I actually went through some text message. He said a compliance focus leads to a complacency mindset. So that's why it is important that type of foresight be applied not only to health and safety but even as an individual. And it is incumbent on leaders or elders. I figure everybody at this table can be considered elders because we've been in an industry long enough to be considered one,
yeah.
right? But it's incumbent on us to do three things for newcomers or really for anybody. I shouldn't even just stop at saying newcomers or youth. Just and it's gonna sound pretty crazy. The first one's gonna come out of left field, but love. Discipline and respect. And if we do so, those three things as leaders and as elders, our industry stands a great chance. And the future for our industry does look bright, right? Mm-hmm. To take from Patrick Bet-David. I love what he says. He finishes everything with the future looks bright. It does indeed look bright, but it's only if you use that lens.
Because he sees the power of changing the narrative. Because the narrative,
the opportunity
because that's the narrative right now is that the future doesn't look bright.
Dude, the narrative of our industry is garbage.
Easier to see it that way.
It matches our industry's reputation.
And I don't know if you know this, but your mind is geared towards negativity.
Of course it is.
It's geared like everybody out there. Like I'm no psychologist, but your mind is geared towards the negative. So like when a positive thing happens, the first thing you'll do is doubt it. Like that's the thing. So when you have these sort of you know, narratives and this anchoring and all this stuff on that survivability level, it's hard to get out.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get out. And then, like I said, if your basic needs aren't being met, it's like, then you're just struggling to make those basic needs. It's like, that's why lack of housing affects people. That's why lack of food security affects people. That's why there's like deep rooted issues. Like people don't know, even if you can afford food, understanding that like that those peppers might not be there next week, it does something to you.
Maybe also that's why things aren't being fixed as fast as they should. Maybe it's just convenient for them to keep things on a slow pace like this.
And no one's
to really fuck with people, right? And fuck with their livelihoods. And if you look at negativity, if I may just real quick tag on to what you shared. If you look at negativity, look at how people are being marketed. It's all about influence and marketing towards the negative and how people can get what they need in order to improve their lives. They're leveraging negativity. If you want to read an excellent book, it's called Influence by Robert Cialdini.
I've also read Persuasion.
It's fucking.
I'm amazing. Already there.
Yeah.
I'm already there.
Yeah.
So I get it. And like the other thing that you have to also realize is like let's just go deep into it. The influencing gurus, all these people that are like my five-step system, you know, influencing all that. What they're doing is they are feeding you a fixed mindset. It's do these five steps, this will net you this. And everybody buys it because why? Because it's like, hey, if I do these five steps, I'll be as successful as this person. But I don't know why I want to be successful as that person, because they're not asking why. Exactly. So then, you know, and I think a lot of it does stem from, you know, our level two, which will be status. So level two status is like, so the way I kind of in a nutshell, like view this one is like, because you make more, maybe you got it, maybe you show off more. So let's say you get out of that survivability. We break that egg. Yeah. You've broken the mold. You're moving forward in your trade. Maybe you're a 4-year journeyman. You're making top rate. You know, things are starting to like look up and whatever. And you're just kind of living your life, right? Well, now it's like, you know, it becomes a sort of like, well, now I'm of this status. I belong to this club. So people in the club help this person and stuff like that. So there becomes a sort of thing. And like, you know, he did so-and-so project, so he'd be good for this project. Mm-hmm. But the issue with that type of mentality I'm finding is it's like, and again, you can see this all over Instagram, which is...
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, it's all being spawned from doom scrolling.
Exactly.
You're comparing yourself to...
And comparison is the thief of joy, as we all know. So when we come to these like heads, when we fill our mind with these things, first of all, we're not allowing space to occur. So we're not able to like think on our own. We're just kind of filling it with, you know, all of these like, oh, you know, these guys are doing this build. Why am I not doing this build? By the way, I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been there. Right. And so the thing is, it's like, I think in the building industry, a lot of guys are getting jobs based on how they look and not based on their experience towards things.
I completely agree with you.
Because a lot of guys, like, for example, Richard does not have social media. The guy that I mentioned before, he's an insane stone carver. He's like, I don't need the clout.
More work than he can handle.
Yeah. But his go-to CV would be like, drive by this building.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem, is I agree
and
with you.
And word of mouth. Let's not forget that one.
Whoever was on that, or whether trades were working on that. But the kids of today are just like, here's my CV. Scroll. Doom scroll and all this other shit. I want to try something with the three of you guys. I want to, you guys pick whichever trade. I want to come up with a bunch of negative situations that are everyday situations with whatever trade, whatever job site. And then tell me what the bright side of that situation is. Or what it can be. So if like, we all know that we do this. We all go in, if there's something going on, we just go towards that negative thought first. Even though if it hasn't unfolded completely, your thought process is that you're thinking negative. But you don't even know the answer yet. You haven't even experienced it, right? So I'm just trying to think of what somewhat negative things are happening to tradespeople on job sites that they can look at it as a positive instead of a negative.
Wow, great question.
I'm just going back to the Patrick Bet-David. That's what I'm like. Mm. If everything is looking bright.
So you're saying
you're in the shit on a job site. You're a tradesperson. And there's a scenario that happened. I mean, we don't have to go extreme and someone's dying or there's an accident or something like that. But there's shit going on.
So something got screwed up. Okay.
Like, okay, whatever. Maybe it's like been raining for a week. You got your rubbers on and you're like stuck in the mud and you lift it up.
I got it.
Like this is the shit, right?
This is a generic, can be applicable to any sub trade. You made a mistake and you damaged something.
Yeah.
Why don't you go see the site manager, whatever, the superintendent, and we made accountable. Share the mistake. It is, in my opinion, it's happened on many of our sites. Instead of hiding it. Mm-hmm. You know what we did with those that came up to us? We never backcharged. I only backcharged once and it was a fucking a very bad experience. But if people came up to us, there's a way to do it so that the repair gets done. It may be bartered. It may be even, don't worry about it. It's good. We're good.
I like most of the time. It's built together. So if there's a fault,
of course,
fault
there has together. To be teamwork. And if someone is able to admit the mistake, they take ownership, and ownership and accountability is huge.
Yep.
Right. So that's a massive win. But there is also the cohesiveness that happens from doing so, because people are going to look at you differently. They're going to say, Jonathan stepped up to the plate, admitted his mistake, but we were able to help out. And it made me feel like it made me look at Jonathan in a different light. And this guy's solid, man.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of actually the reverse scenario that doesn't occur. And this doesn't really answer your question, but it comes back full circle. Think of this is a real situation, right? Bobcat driving underground, hits a fixture in the underground, 347 volt, right? Live 347 volt. I mean, somebody touches that, it's hospital. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say shit. Electrician comes by and loses his marbles because that's dangerous, right? And all it was a lack of psychological safety on site for that guy who was driving the Bobcat to say, holy shit, man, I screwed up and hit that. Because you know what the electrician would have said? No problem. Thank you for telling me. Shut the power off. Fix the light.
Solve right? the issue.
Solve the issue. Nobody cares. It's great that it's piggybacking exactly what you said. Take the accountability. Show up. Because we'll fix it.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit to our growth and fixed mindset a little bit. This is where the danger of the fixed mindset is. Because if you're sitting there and a bad situation happens, somebody who has a fixed mindset will not look at that situation and go, how can I grow from this? Somebody with
that won't even enter their
mind. No, they will hide it. They will bury it. They will get as far away from it. Yeah. They'll just walk away from it. Somebody with a growth mindset will look at that and go, how can I use this to learn from? See, what we're talking about is we're talking about mental resiliency here. If there's anything that you will learn, because like that's the thing. Like, let's bring up a guy that you and I both know, Jim Carrick. How many bad scenarios has Jim Carrick seen in his lifetime?
What day of the week
and,
is it?
And we're not even, we're just going to talk construction. We're not going to talk about legal. We're not going to talk about BC.
Just construction,
right? Yeah. He's seen it all. I'm going to assume seen it all, right? I've nothing but love for Jim. And the thing is, every time, without Jim even knowing it, every time Jim had one of those things step up, he probably looked at it and went, okay, you know what? We're going to take the hit. We're going to learn from this. And guess what? We're not going to do that next time.
Yeah.
That's it.
Some of the three examples that we've somewhat been talking about equally is happens subconsciously. If they just admit it, they're not subconsciously, not knowing they're actually taking a step closer to of a growth mindset.
And
how can they admit it? Because at the top, they're shamed and blamed.
There's enough of that to go around for everybody and blamed in our industry.
That the growth mindset's got to occur from the supportive team above you first. If the guys above you are dickheads with a fixed mindset, they're going to say, Jonathan, how could you hit that light?
Is that a prerequisite that they've seen it happen to another employee, another tradesperson from the top? So they don't want to. If they had a growth mindset, they reverted right back to a fixed mindset.
I feel that is what is systemic in our industry. It's taught, whether it's taught by actual examples or by someone witnessing it. It's taught in our industry. And
how does one get out of it?
Well, here, can I just add to that point as well? So how familiar are you with game theory?
I'm not.
Okay, so there's this thing in game theory where what they do is it's kind of like, if I stab you, you stab me, right?
Sure.
Can we retaliation, make right? So if there's three people, right? So the thing is, what they actually found is the people that make it farthest, like that's a very like fixed mindset.
Wait, hang on a second. There's three people, but no, two people have stabbed each other?
Yeah, so it's like if three people are running a race, okay? So you stab me and I stab you. Okay. So we're stabbing each other in the back constantly. And then there's a third guy. That third guy gets stabbed, right? What they found is if that guy doesn't retaliate and change his behavior, he actually wins the race in the long run.
Rather than stabbing
the other two. Because the other two take each other out. And then that guy
makes total sense.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's game theory 101. Yeah. And they have done tests and studies and that happens.
Only because the nerd in me, where did you get it? Can you
Patrick Biles, Paul Biles, something like that.
Okay,
he's
off camera. Maybe you can share.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah,
be part of the show.
Yeah, no,
but it's just breaking the chain.
But yeah, it's just breaking. But the thing is, a lot of people think like you stab me, I stab you. You stab me, I stab you. You stab me, I stab you.
But that's destruction on a daily basis.
He fucks me, I'm gonna fuck him. Right.
But the thing is, it's us shooting ourselves in the foot because we get into these scenarios where, like we're talking about, where something bad happens on site. The guy thinks from the top down because those guys aren't thinking. Again, those guys from the top down aren't thinking, how can we move together? They're thinking, And then what's happening is that guy goes, well, I know how upper thinks about this, so I'm just going to hide this. And now all of a sudden we have this scenario. And then unfortunately, the guys with the growth mindset, the problem solvers, they're the ones that have to go in and solve it.
One of the quickest ways that can change on a site is what type of core values are you bringing to it?
Right? Yep.
And that starts with, first and foremost, the construction management firm or the GC. And evidently, if they're choosing or they've surrounded themselves with like-minded sub-trades and suppliers, that means that everybody else has bought in and shares some of the same core values. So already you're starting to tighten the nucleus. And if you're working from that, and also working only with clients that share some of the same ideals, you working from the what I refer to as the ideal client avatar, you're reducing the amount of risk or the truthfully, the amount of possibilities that if something goes wrong, you won't be equipped or you won't be surrounded by the people that want to help you fix whatever problem came up or whatever mistake was made.
That's where the best mentors have come from. I mean, like, you know, in this mindset book that we keep on referring to, you know, there's like, you know, things like Xerox and like, there was a couple other companies that like got really pulled out of the muck. And that's because the guys that came in and took over the larger CEO positions thought of the companies as moving forward as a we,
yeah,
instead of an I, you know? So how do we develop this sort of we mentality, right, amongst individuals, amongst that? And that's why also, like, when you're talking about GCs, when GCs come to the table and they're like, I've been working with this trade for X amount of years, this is the guy we use, don't worry about pricing, because like these are the yeah. things that like certain clients don't really put together. It's like, this guy's going to show up on time. He's a little bit more expensive, but the thing is, he's going to show up. He's going to do the job that I know he's going to do. He's going to do it safely. And I think like sometimes that falls by the wayside.
There's a lot of tools and modalities that can be utilized out there. And I'll name some later on. Actually, I'll name one right now, a Colby test. And before sharing what Colby test is, it's just ensuring that people are using and working from their unique abilities. So what the Colby test allows you to do is measure their strengths. And with that, you're able to, even though it's workforce, you can still put them through that test because you're able to see what in each individual's strengths are. And there's no right answers to these tests because it's your own unique strengths, right? And then you can start by pairing people that work well together because they mesh with their strengths and weaknesses. It is important that it's not just about pairing people that have equal strengths. Going back to what you pulled earlier about that that example of someone who has strengths, and rather than separating,
validating them, isolating them,
putting them,
et cetera,
right? It
allow them to create effort where they have to work as a team.
There you go.
And like to that point as well, I am amazed at some of the job sites I've worked on. Like, first of all, I gotta admit, when I walk onto a job site, a lot of homes are about $1 million these days. So it's really easy to walk onto anybody's property or house and be like, I work on $1 million houses. I also look at that and I go, wow, I'm working on $1 million houses. And I don't think I'll ever lose that. I don't think I'll, like, that's the way I view it. And so when I go on these projects that are like $3-4 million homes or something like that, it's like, when I see a guy not being considerate to other trades or not picking up their trash or something like that, I kind of look, I give my head a shake and I'm like, look at where we are. Like, this is going to be someone's home. They're investing money in us. They're keeping us working. Like,
but the majority of construction is an I mentality.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things we need to change. Imagine if we taught, again, I pull from respect and discipline. Imagine if we taught that. If the schools, listen, maybe if the schools don't want to teach it, I'm happy to teach it.
But maybe it's already taught at the very beginning. Maybe the young trades that are coming in, they get that mentorship and they get that person who actually incites them and just go, listen, focus on respect and discipline. And then it's changed over time. They get changed over time.
I think those guys are very far and few between. But like, I'll give you an example of one of my best mentors was Mike Pereira. Mm-hmm. So Mike and me are very similar in the sense that we are very meticulous on certain things. And it's like, this is just the way you do it, right? And me and him actually worked together for a couple of years, and it was the best time of my life. But that's because every morning I showed up, it was, good morning, how are you? This is how we're tackling the day. And Mike is like probably still to this day like one of my best mentors, because there was a lot of respect for the not only just the work, but just him as a person as well. And then he also reciprocated that to me. And I never felt like there was a, like in my own mind, maybe I thought he was here because he'd been in it for longer and stuff like that. But he always treated me as a peer. And that's the thing, is like, I think that a lot of the older tradesmen that are coming out, you need to start looking around and start finding your peers. They do exist, but it's like, you're going to have to work on breaking them out of that survivability shell.
Yeah.
And then bringing them in. And then it's kind of like that person's with me. And it's really difficult to do it when job sites are constantly revolving and work is constantly changing and all that type of stuff.
And the pressures are always keep getting stronger and stronger, right? From owners first and foremost, and then leadership from the company who actually accepted to execute whatever unrealistic demands and expectations are.
And maybe that's another way of like looking, like I'm just kind of like piecing it all together here. But maybe that's another way of like looking at status too, is like when you've achieved a sort of status amongst your tradesmen, where now you can sort of pick and choose the individuals that you want to work with.
Yeah.
And then that kind of leads into like our level three freedom. You know what I mean? Level three freedom, I think for somebody who's working like maybe in a union type setting or like big high rise and stuff like that, is being able to pick and choose who you work with. Mm-hmm. So you can build that team. And it's like, you know, not upper management doesn't always like that, but it's kind of like, but I'm the trades guy and I'm doing the work anyway. So how about you just let me pick and choose my team so that we can get these individuals. And that also did happen to me in the union. Every once in a while, the crew of guys, like a select five guys would go to this one project and they just stay there and they just work together. And then you learn, you know, about their family and their kids and all this stuff. And then it creates this really cool team dynamic. But I can't tell you how earth shattering it was for me as like a young 22-year-old when they pulled me from that job.
Sure.
And sent me somewhere else. It was like, but how am I going to learn? And then it's like I get brought to a completely different site where there's a complete different dynamic. Maybe they're all the same nationality, like Polish or Spanish and stuff like that. So now I got to learn Spanish and Polish. And it really...
So what was your thought process doing that?
Honestly, I will tell you, I was in survivability mode my whole time I was in the union. Mm. I was never thinking about... And a lot of fear was also instilled in me. It was always every winter, it never ceased to fail. Every November, it was like, oh, you know, the jobs aren't coming in and all this stuff. So you tighten up and you work really hard and you show up on the rain days, regardless of whether or not, you know, maybe the hours get chintzed a little short and you don't worry about it because you don't want to be the squeaky wheel. And yeah. you do all kinds of things because all you're trying to do is just keep your job and keep the money coming in. And that's also like a very paycheck to paycheck mentality. But if you start, like we said, putting that money away, creating that space, maybe that financial pressure isn't as much anymore. You can sort of create that space in your mind for that growth to occur where you're like, you know what? I'm kind of sick and tired of being abused here. Maybe I'll hop ship and go to another company, you know, because a lot of people don't have that luxury. You know what I mean?
Fixed and growth, 50-50?
What?
In the construction industry.
Oh God, I'd say like,
I know, I'm not, I'm just being,
I'm, I'd say like it's closer to like a 90-10. Like
I'd agree with that.
And then I was
going to go even less.
And then it's also, and then I would also say like, I would say that like guys that I've seen that have a growth mindset who go back into like a unionized setting, excel so quickly up the ladder.
I could see that.
Like so quickly, but yeah. The issue is they excel so fast and then they're just like,
they hit the ceiling.
Yeah. They hit the ceiling and they're just like, fuck. Like,
so what's next for them?
Yeah.
Business like you.
Exactly. And it's like, well, do I go back to being an entrepreneur or am I just in a slump, you know, because it is really difficult to create your own autonomy and world, like in sort of the guys that seem to have all the work. You know what I mean? It is really tough to do that.
You know, I want to piggyback on the paycheck to paycheck mentality and the freedom. You know, first and foremost, freedom is one of the things I wish our industry embraces, specific to leadership and our elders, is the ability to say no. I keep going back to, you know, the pressures that come from owners wanting our services, wanting to hire us for our services. Their unrealistic demands and expectations. If we keep accepting them, we keep passing that stuff down to which trickles down to site, and then that gets repurposed into the mental health struggles that we're experiencing. So break free from the uncertainty and from the fear of going paycheck rather than paycheck to paycheck. The companies are going from project to project. They're continuously accepting work from anybody that's willing to come in to the door. I'm not going to regurgitate, but I talked about, you know, the ideal client avatar and working and living from your core values. But if somebody start, or if, as an industry, we started realizing just how powerful we are, and we started reclaiming some of those powers, because in continuously accepting to work under the conditions that we perpetuate for ourselves and for our workforce, we're not going to change. It's going to take for us to stand up and start reclaiming our powers. One of the things that I feel that's happened, not I feel, that I've observed us accepting decades ago, even prior to me coming into the industry, is what's referred to as a Faustian bargain, a deal with the devil. We accepted so many things that we should have never accepted and let go so much power for two things: opportunity, which is projects, and wealth, money. But that's come at a large cost.
But we're doing it at survivability.
That's what I mean.
That's what it is.
That's what it is. So here's where this discussion is supposed to go, though, is if now you're aware of it, now you can start working towards it.
True.
So if that's what we're trying to achieve here, is if we can start them just thinking like, okay, am I coming? Like I'll give you an example. When I first started, everything that moves, shoot everything that moves. Because I'm a young, hungry entrepreneur. Yeah. Everything that moves. Hell, I'll even take on caulking. Even though I'm not a I'll learn. Like, right. That's a thing, right?
Right.
Because you do that. So you go outside of those, you do this stuff. Like, and if I knew about this motivation, and if I knew about this, maybe I would have taken a step back from some of my projects and said, I'm not taking that. And the reason why I'm not taking that is because I am operating from a point of survivability right now. Because the thing is, if that fucks up, I am royally fucked.
That comes back again now to what you talked about earlier, is why the hell are you doing it in the first place, right? If it doesn't align with your core values.
Well, if you'd like, I'm happy to share to you, all of you here, and also to the listeners. I made one of those mistakes, and that was me branching off from my core values, branching off from what I'm good at, my unique abilities, and taking on something that I should have never done in the first place to a tune of a, and I'm not, this is not a word of a lie, $365,000 mistake. That's an after-tax mistake. $1,000 a day is what it cost me, that mistake. And I still remember to this day, a good, very good friend of mine who still does a lot of work for me, told me, he says, Gianluca, stick to what you know.
Yeah. So
take that for what it is.
So it's really just stemming from this sort of like, I think what we're all kind of saying in a roundabout way is like this survivability mentality that we really need to break out of it, because it causes you to do things like maybe things that are unsafe, maybe things that are not out of your wheelhouse. Maybe it's pushing you towards that. But again, that's why everything is so connected, because like, again, when all you hear is the narrative of like food going up and houses not doing that, you know, because that all falls underneath it too, right? You have people taking more and more risk. You had MySV1 come in here the other day, and like they'll talk about like, you know, with a lot of these migrant workers in here, and this is my concern was, you know, how many guys are stepping them through the safety protocols? How many guys are having them, you know, like when you have a swamper doing this and you have the guy up top who doesn't understand what he's saying, you know, like how many hands get taken recipe. Off and right. that type of thing.
And in addition to that, you translate that into the compressed schedules and then also the trade stacking that happens on site. It is no wonder that even though we've improved, I should say, as it relates to health and safety on construction sites, it is still no wonder that there are mistakes happening that are costing either, that are making, causing accidents, causing people to lose limbs, or even lose their lives, most of which should not even be happening.
Right. Exactly.
Going back to the race with the razor blade batons stabbing each other.
Yeah.
It was you and Jonathan and Mark.
How closely connected our survivability and happiness? Is it a battle? Is it a fight? Because you're fighting the survivability of a situation, but how you react to that survivability is a connection to how you're going to be happy.
I think everybody has to endure a certain level of survivability. I think that you get tired. Everybody has a certain resilience, right, towards it. I think the farther you go along that path and move away from it, the happier you become. because because as the motivation ladder tells us, you move into status where maybe you're not taking on those like $100 jobs anymore, and maybe you're not living, you know, hand to mouth. So now you're kind of working in nicer neighborhoods where the neighbors aren't dickheads, and like, and then all of a sudden you move into this sort of freedom of level three, which I see as like, for example, like I get to sit and do a podcast on a rain day. Mm-hmm. You know, I get to catch up on my paperwork.
We brought the rain in.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like now all of a sudden, and I'm not thinking, sitting there looking out my window, because this was me literally going, it's fucking raining. I got to get this job done. I got to get this check in the bank. I got bills to pay. Like I'm not in that mind. And now it's created this space where we can then move into like a level four, which is like a purpose. And I can figure out what my purpose is. And purpose generally stems from like that deeper why, as to like, what do I want my legacy to be? Again, I'll bring him up again. Jim, you're getting plugged on this one. But like Jim started off HVAC mechanical, goes in, starts building high-end homes in Toronto, you know, then he starts quoting, and now he doesn't need to necessarily be on the tools, even though, and he has also the freedom to be on the tools if he wants to. People aren't going to say, hey, Jim, don't be on the tools. He's going to say, go fuck yourself. But he probably won't say that. But that's the thing. And now he runs Rental for Heroes.
Yeah.
His purpose, his legacy, he's getting there. But the thing is, I view purpose as one of those things where like, this is a journey. You got to think a lot about yourself and where you want to go. Like, cause not everybody wants to do charity, you know, and purpose means a lot of different things for different people. Also getting rich means a lot of different things for a lot of different people as well.
But the definition of rich is different for everybody.
Exactly. Sure. And one of the things that I really liked about, you know, your next five moves is like a lot of people, when you ask them, why are you doing this? And they're like, well, I want to get rich. I want to make money. It's like, but why do you want to make money? And I started thinking about that too. And realistically what it was, you play the lotto game, right? What if you won the lottery and stuff like that? And I would still work. The way that I would work it though, is I'd fund the projects I'm working on because I like what I do, because I've asked myself my why, because I love this trade. I love the journey I'm on.
Is it not because you want to learn?
It's because I want to constantly learn. And that's another thing too about a growth mindset, is they're really hard on themselves, these people, because it's either when a mistake happens, they're like, I should have known better, or they're like, I haven't learned that thing yet. So it becomes this sort of battle within yourself, having that mindset. It's not all positive, right? Because you're sitting there and you're going like, okay, like I should have known. But for me, the way I look at like getting rich is I don't want to be Jeff Bezos, you know, where I want every dollar in the world. I just want enough to do certain things, to see certain things. And I think that's what people need to really, I think that's lacking huge in today's society. Because again, with the Black Mirror and looking at Instagram and coveting being one of those things, it's like, you know, I want the Ferrari. Why do you want the Ferrari? Because I can tell you right now, Ferrari in Canada is a bad investment because the roads are shit. There's no Autobahn. Like you have to take it to the,
and it's parked for 5 months.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, and so the practicality of things, you know, I want a big house. Well, do you want the property taxes with the house, or do you want to show people that house?
What are the little steps that everybody could take to get to that purpose?
First, I think it's look at your, I think you got to, again, it's rungs of the ladder, right?
Yeah.
So you got to start from the bottom, and you got to say, you got to be really honest with yourself, and you got to be like, I am at the bottom. I am in survivability. Take responsibility for where you're at. Take accountability for where you're at. And everybody has a path. And I think that what they can do is they can mold their path, because this mindset book is full of people who weren't naturals, but efforted towards certain things.
Yeah.
And if you have that clear purpose, if you have that clear goal in mind and you effort towards it, you will start making the connections. You will start moving into status-driven conversations. You will move to status-driven people. You will then start realizing that you have more freedom to think about these things that you want to do. And then next thing you know, you finally come to that end, that purpose, and you can sort of like start molding your world. That's the way I look at it, is it's like I've engaged in this trade so I can mold my time, mold my world, so that I can kind of just continue to do it and go forward. I hope to not retire. I really do. Or be involved in construction in some way, shape, or form. You know,
if I may ask or add to finding purpose, there's a few things that I would suggest also is being curious,
yeah,
being adaptable.
We were all that at the beginning,
right? But we can never step away from it. Even though you reach a status, you always this is my take on it, right? I feel that in life you always need to remain curious. You need to be adaptable. You need to continuously implement what you learn from opportunities, from situations, or from individuals. And that one thing that's been extremely difficult for me is allowing things to happen and not chase it all the fucking time, right?
Amen. I'm not religious, but yeah, amen, man.
And the last one, which is also equally difficult, as just being fucking present.
Yeah.
Never mind thinking about the past, which brings up sadness or anger, or worrying too much about the present or a future, which brings up anxiety. Be present, be happy, be grateful. We talked even before coming on, going online, how important gratefulness is. Be present, but also be grateful for what you have. Because if you're grateful for what you have, there's more of that shit coming, man.
Yep.
Yeah, me and my wife do this thing. We do, every once in a while, we do what we call a gratitude check. So we'll sit there in our living room, and I'm not preaching guruism or anything like that. We'll basically look at each other and I go, we have shelter, like we have a house, we have food, we have two kids that are happy, healthy, we have jobs, we have heat, we have cars in the driveway. And it's like, and then when you start listing off those things and then you start thinking about how much other stuff you have, it just becomes this exercise where you're like, oh shit. Yeah. Like I actually have quite a bit, and it really just changes your whole world.
It's a massive game changer. One of the things that I've implemented and one learned. The implement is a gratitude exercise at every family meal. So now we just go around the table and ask everybody sitting around the table, what are you grateful for? It could be just grateful. Listen, it doesn't need to be big, right? I can say that I'm grateful that someone held the door open for me at the grocery store this morning. And the other thing is the implementation that I want to piggyback on what you said about gratitude is I was a member of Strategic Coach for a couple of years, and Dan and Babs are amazing people, and they taught me positive focus. And I've implemented that for every meeting that I do now. And it's somewhat the same exercise. We go around the table and allow people to introduce themselves real quick and say, what are they grateful for? And it's a complete and utter game changer. You do that a bit at a beginning of a meeting, watch how people change. Yeah. Somebody may come in, they have the weight of the world on them, and you'll see their shoulders pull back and maybe even a smirk come to their face. Sorry, Jonathan.
No, we know that. I love that, because we know that when grateful is present, fear and worry is not. We know that neurologically, that's what's going to occur. I was thinking about the story you were sharing before about, holy shit, there's a guy, you know, it's pouring rain, standing there in rain boots, stuck in a mud on a job site. And one version of that story could...
By the way, that guy was me.
Right? But one, yeah. And every construction worker out there, right? So like one version of the story is like, fuck, this sucks. And then that narrative here. Or it's like, well, thank goodness I got the rubber boots today and not the regular boots. And thank goodness I got a job to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And holy shit, you know what? This rain today allowed me to be on a podcast. Or this rain today allowed me to sit out.
Three words. I get to go to work.
So,
I get to drive a vehicle. I get to wake up this morning and witness the sunshine and the birds singing. Like it's,
I love that. I love that because we live in a society that's, I have to do this. No. Take that word have to and say get to.
Yep. And another thing with regard, going back to negativity, rather than look at, forgive me, I had a brain fart here.
That's okay.
Rather than saying that life happens to me, life happens for me. So why is this happening right now? There's always a reason behind it, right? I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I've been having a tremendous weeks, plural. And yesterday I got off a call for a new prospect. Again, super positive. Out of the corner of my eye, because I had my laptop open. Max, you see the email come up and you can probably read the first 20 words of the email. I already knew that what was there behind the rest of the email was not going to be good. And I truthfully, it wasn't good, but I wasn't quite happy receiving it. But quickly, there's a couple of things that happen. I switched to what's happening here. Why is this happening? And there must be a reason why I didn't get that opportunity, because there's maybe something better around the corner. I shit you not, not even 2 minutes later, I get a call from a very good friend. And he said, you know, how's it going? I proceed to tell him everything's going great. However, I don't know why I felt compelled to share about that email. He goes, Gianluca, you can't win them all. I said, you're absolutely right.
But you want to.
You're right. However, it's just the fact that it's just the fact that I got that call and he confirmed the same thought that was in my mind. Listen, I'm a huge proponent and a huge believer in the universe, and the universe works in mysterious ways. And the fact that all of those things happen in such a short time period confirms that that opportunity wasn't for me and there's something better around the corner.
It took me, I would say, 8 years, maybe even 10, a decade in my trade. No, a decade, sorry, in my own business, to get to the point where I thought like that. Where I looked at jobs that didn't come through and go, this is making room for something else.
Right.
It is so hard as an entrepreneur.
You never see it at the moment.
No, it's, but again, when you are, again, driven by survivability, shoot everything that moves, be a hustler, like grind it out, like break it all, like kill it all. Like these are catchphrases that gurus and gym goers and all these people use, right? And it's like, sometimes you got to look at the space that it's making. And it is so difficult. The way I kind of view it is like, you have a capacity in your brain, like a CPU, right? And if you're filling it constantly, if you're filling that space with either little parts of like, you know, covetous nature or negative thoughts or something like that, you're not creating the space you need to have an honest conversation with yourself if you're always filling that time. So the thing is, and the only way that that expands is through resiliency. So going through hard shit or making space and learning and knowledge. That's it. So if you want to be able to take on the world, if you want to take on these things, you need to learn about it. You need to experience it, because nobody is going to listen to you and nobody's going to follow you if you don't have A, the experience, or B, the knowledge to back that. And that might come vice versa too. You might need the knowledge and then the experience, or, you know, those kinds of things.
True. To piggyback on making space for everything else, we can apply this it's applicable in so many ways by so many people and companies for that matter. As the person, if you are careful with who you surround yourself with, for every one bad person you remove in your life or within your circle of influence, guess what? You're making room for two or three more, because that's how much room and how much air they suck up from the room, these bad people, these bad apples. The same goes with the business. I mentioned earlier the ideal client avatar and lining yourself up only with clients that share the same core values. Remove one bad client, you got room for what? Two or three more?
I'll take you one step further when we talked about growth versus fixed mindset, right? If you take out that person who is like near the top with a fixed mindset out, all of a sudden now you have people that were below who have a growth mindset start coming to you with ideas.
Yeah.
And what does that do now? Now all of a sudden your company's innovative, it breathes life again, it does all these things. These are the positive things.
Which leads us back to way at the beginning, we said, this is how we've always done it. This is what you got to work with. And this is how,
so how do you change it? This is the problem I have.
We keep talking about it. So this is props again to you and to the Construction Life and to TNT, the new tough. This is a great platform for us in order to be able to get the word across. But what does it take? It takes getting all of these like-minded individuals to find each other.
And bring awareness.
I think it attracts each other. Like, it does. I don't think the majority of us in the industry are looking for misery.
I think they're looking for positivity. But what I want people to understand is that, first and foremost, this is not meant for everybody. Second of all, it doesn't take 51% in order to make the change. There are studies out there that you can do it as low as 12% and as high as about 24%. I'm just going rough at the top of my head. So we don't need 51% in order to tip it, right? So by continuously talking about it and continuously driving solutions, because it's not just about talking shit about it. We got to continuously talking about it with regards to offering solutions, offering coping mechanism on whatever topics we're talking about, but continuously doing so, so that people start finding each other. And once we find each other, we'll create a separate ecosystem and get away from this fucking shit show that is the construction industry right now.
All we're really trying to do is make it an industry that recruits people in, that allows people to come in and not see it as all the stigmas that we've already all talked about.
Organically
and
pulls people in, right?
Exactly.
Just the energy comes out and says, be a part of it.
And teaches them and promotes them and gives them opportunity for growth. That's the construction industry that we need to become. But again, it's not meant for everybody.
I know, but I go back to the numbers. I'm looking at the numbers and I'm just trying to, let's just say for argument's sake, if you got one person coming in and there's a 9-in-1 chance that you're going to have somebody who has a fixed mindset, most likely that one person who's coming in that is wanting a growth mindset is going to be paired up with a fixed mindset. And then it's on them now to either absorb what they want to teach them. They won't necessarily always be lucky enough to meet up another growth.
I'm going to take a stab at this. I'm just putting this all together now.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Picking teams.
But I think
right?
This is where I'm going to be 100% biased. I think that's why you need to invest more in private industry. In private construction. Because the thing is, if I'm more,
I agree with you.
I think if I have an intimate team, okay, if I've just been extremely grateful and lucky for my experience in the industry, okay? But if I have a very tight-knit team, I'll give you an example. The guy that I have right now working with me is a great worker. He's a farmer. He's a great worker. Huh. But he hates himself when he makes a mistake. Like, Lowe's,
that's a great worker.
Which is a great worker. No, it's a great thing. But here's the thing. He beats himself up so much, I pull him out of the ditch.
But that's a we mentality.
And that's a we mentality because he's no good to me if he's a puddle. Yeah. So here's the thing. If you give me the ability to get 5 guys underneath me, I'm going to continue that.
I know you will.
And that's the thing. And we're getting
but
to
any kind of funding or any kind of progression. Where is it thrown at?
The short-sightedness of that is the proverbial they who are up here, who run the large ships, are leaking. And they're not just leaking from a money standpoint, but the workers aren't there.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to have is you're going to have in, I'll give it a decade, in the next 10 years, you are going to see more small private industry companies moving into bigger job sites.
They're going to be growing faster.
Yes. You're going to see it. You're going to see it.
From your mouth to God's ears. But here's the thing. Would you agree that right now what's being thrown out there with regards to opportunity and more so money, the funding that's being doled out, it's being picked up by these larger firms and it's being picked up by the unions.
That's the issue. Yep.
And my biggest bone I have to pick, and I'm not going to stop talking about this until it's fixed and until we get the respect that we deserve. It's the small to medium enterprises that are getting the shit end of the fucking stick, because everybody else that's out there are all like vultures. Those are the people that have the relationships. Those are the people that have the lobbyists in there. Those are the people that that are first in line to receive. I want that changed because on top of his point, it's the small to medium enterprises that pull the fucking weight in this industry
and front the bill. And the thing is, you and I both see that. Manny sees that. Everybody in this room sees that. So it's how do we shoot the flare to be like, hey, all we're trying to do here is live a little bit better than most. Seriously, we're looking to prosper. We are. And I will take this to my grave. It's government's job. Its sole purpose, said in Aristotle's, the politics. It is government's job and purpose. Its only job is the prosperity of the people. Mm-hmm. That is it. Mm-hmm. That is it. Stop. Nothing else.
But no government.
If you are not prospering your people, you're no government. That's it. I will go to the stand with that one. I carry that with me all the time. And it's such an ancient thing to say, but it's true. It's
the solutions to this are multifaceted. The right. first picture
we could do a whole nother podcast on it.
The first picture that comes to mind is, you know, the individuals that are able to spin plates on these sticks, you know, and they got fucking a ton of sticks, but that's what it is.
Gypsies?
That's how much we need to be looking at once. Right. One of the things that I'll come out and say is that the way we govern ourselves no longer works. That's hard stop. So what would help govern ourselves a lot better? I heard this in Frank Stronach. I went to an After Five event by the Scarborough Business Association. By the way, props, and I'd love to introduce you to Sean Allen. The guy's a fucking genius, and he's doing amazing. Sean, awesome. I love you, man. So having said that, Frank Stronach was the guest speaker that evening, and he shared that one of the things that he sees, this is a 92-year-old man who's done pretty fucking well for himself, right? He says, we need a chamber of citizens, and he pulled that from Churchill, by the way. Imagine if there were a chamber of citizens that oversaw what the government did, who, by the way, worked for us and not the other way around, to hold their feet to the fire.
So in this book, The Politics by Aristotle, the way that they used to pick members of parliament, members of the democracy is if you yielded a good crop year after year, you became the Minister of Agriculture.
Yep.
Well, fuck, and if that was the case, we'd be ramen.
Right? And then the other thing that they did is they did it so that people of noble birth and nobility had to actually pay the government to hold seat. And then people who weren't of noble birth or something like that could move in and they didn't have to fund their seat. So you got this collective of people. Again, ancient civilizations, there was a lot of things also wrong with the Romans, but reading this book and going through it, you're going, why is it?
A lot of good data
there. There's yeah. I want the guy that I want dictating to me how my small business runs is somebody who's in small business.
Yeah, we've had business experience.
They're talking about a corporate cap right now. That's going to land right in the middle of small corporations. That's going to land in their lap. It's not going to hit the top tier guys that they want because they've already got them clocked. And that's the thing is they move these pieces around in their short-sightedness. And then the long-term deficits is sort of what the small to medium guys end up getting hit with. But again, back to our points, if that guy is just locked into a survivability mindset, he has no time to think about anything coming down the pipe. He just merely has to accept and then move his business, move that mind, that plate that doesn't get bigger anymore because he's just trying to make it happen. And see how that all kind of comes through.
And that's probably also one of the reasons why people either don't vote or continue to vote the way they do.
Right. I think it's also one of the reasons why people like kind of keeping their fixed mindsets too.
Yeah.
Because why grow when they're just going to cut me out from underneath my legs?
I don't make a difference. It leads to that too, right?
Yeah, but a lot of government funding is being given to the core group of people that are not changing.
It's giving,
anything.
It's giving,
so you're rewarding giving failures instead of looking at possibilities and rewarding those possibilities over the failures.
But buddy, what's coming down? I've seen a brief from a policy writer here in the government of Ontario. I won't say for what, because then it's the cat's going to come out of the bag, but I read it and it's fucking scary is what it is. It's very concerning.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, the reason why this affects the construction industry so heavily is because all I hear is we need more houses, we need more tradesmen, we need all that. But guys, if you're not funding it properly, if you're not allowing people to prosper, if you're not allowing them to get out of that survivability mindset, why am I not just going to sit at home every night and scroll on my phone?
Well, but then it's an I mentality right
now.
Because everybody is in positions of power is doing financially very well.
Right.
Yep.
And they're leaving the we's.
It's convenient for them.
Yeah, and they're leaving the we's in a very particular financial situation. Mm-hmm.
Without mentioning any names, there is that organization that was, I can only say the word in French, where they're given funds by a government. What's the word for that? Funded. Jesus. Yeah. They were funded by the government, specific for trades, and they had a mandate to get...
You talking about CCQ?
No, here in Ontario.
Okay.
To get trade involvement or trade interest. They had a mandate to get 35,000 over 5 years. And by February of this year, they only managed to get 2,800. You don't remember that conversation?
Oh, you're talking about
that. Right.
You're talking about.
But that's an example of money going to the wrong place and being used in the wrong way. I don't know what the numbers are or how much they were given to find or to get the interest of 35,000 individuals, but only having produced 2,800, take all of that money and divide it by 2,800 and see how much that costs per individual.
Let me ask all three of you guys. How do you solve the housing problem in Canada?
Oh, dude.
First, start outsourcing your goddamn permits.
Yeah.
Privatize it. Get a third party in there. Do fucking something. Because what you're doing right now is not working. The other thing too is the permits hold up so much shit. I'm waiting on an 8-month permit right now. Okay? That means it trickles down.
What other things do you start doing before you actually start digging a hole to solve the housing problem?
What other things? Probably pay the government.
Do you not build the workforce first?
Oh yeah.
No, because we need to be doing that.
So right now we don't have the workforce to currently build what we need to build, and now we're expected to build more.
We're having a hard time building what we're building now.
I know that's what I'm saying. So like my thought process is you build the workforce,
but that's like planting the cedar.
7 years.
That's like planting the cedar.
You need to build the infrastructure. Remember those plates that I told you before?
I understand, but the problem is that when you're getting people of position and power, they don't even address that. There's not one single soundbite.
They don't address it in a positive way.
They're not because they're listening to the wrong people.
Yeah. They're listening to these consultant firms, which is always the top five, that when you read their reports,
regarding that program that you mentioned, it's I don't even know the number, how many zeros were attached to that.
I don't.
Less than 3,000 when they were anticipating 25,000. If that problem was given to you guys, or if it was given to small to medium sized construction business, that problem would be solved in 1 year.
Yeah, because we have to be accountable. We have to be problem solvers.
And
here's the other thing too. What they don't understand, the government entities, I don't think they understand that they think if we give the small to medium guys all this money, they're just going to piss it away. No. You guys are giving it to the larger guys and they're pissing it away. The thing is, there is so many checks and balances on my back end. Like, the thing is, when I quote a client and I show up and I do work, because I do the work, yeah. I'm the trades guy, right? Yeah. When I show up and I do the work, I'm accountable. So if you give me money, I have to show up. And I think what's happening is there's money that's being given out and people aren't showing up.
Here's what's happening right now. Right now, there's already companies that are out there, and I'm lucky to have quite a few of them come to my next dinner on April 25th. We need to talk after this. And they have a great gig going on. And what part of their gig is that they've associated the holistic part of it, which holistic captures everything we've talked about so far in this podcast, right? They've integrated that into how they're addressing the skilled labor shortage. That's what's missing. But that's not going to happen with the consultants that are writing these reports that are essentially copy and paste, or if they're listening to lobbyists, or if they're depending only on policy writers, which more than likely, if you start reading who is writing policy for the housing minister, I don't know for sure.
Have any of those guys built a house?
Do they have experience in the construction industry? I'm willing to think not.
No, I've said it over.
So now we're beating a dead horse, but let's look at it this way, okay? First, numbers don't lie. Accountants love numbers, so let's go into metrics, okay? Because that's the thing that people only seem to understand on a government level or want or care about, right? So let's go this way. You get a crew, you put together a house, okay? And you say, this crew, you fund a unionized crew and you fund a private crew, okay? And you say, this is the style of home that we need to do, go. Okay, this guy's get them done at this time with this price range, these guys get it done in this price range. Okay, we're gonna go here. We're gonna get these guys to do it because they can get it in that. Now we need five other crews like that. And then we just test them out and we keep rolling them out.
Would never happen.
But the thing is, the metric.
Because the answer, they don't want it.
But the metric makes sense. The numbers make sense.
On that metric, you know, I remember you brought this up quite a few times over the last several episodes about bean counters always looking at numbers.
Yeah.
You know, rather than look at numbers, why don't we look at the people? People over profits. You start feeding and educating and nurturing your people.
That's where I was going.
The profits will come. And not only that, they'll eclipse what you were doing before.
Now you start to crowdsource to answer your question. You talk about people. That's what wires me. How do you solve the problem? You got to start with the infrastructure. How do you start with the infrastructure? Fucking ask the folks doing the work.
How do you work crowdsource around the inevitable knock on the door or trigger switch in your car that explodes? Of a group of entity, like a group of people that have control where the money's coming from.
Well, educating the public and educating your industry.
Like it goes back to where we all got started. Well, this is how it was.
It means that we're starting to educate each other, right?
Unions right now today are designed to assist the weak, not designed to build up
and probably also keep them weak.
But the thing is, are the unions even in the subdivisions? Because like I just remember, and again, I'm pulling from my experience, which was a long time ago when I was at Sundial Homes, doing that subdivision just up by in Burloak area, right? They had private subcontractors that were doing the framing. That's what happens in the subdivisions. They're like, okay, guys, like there starts to be a big push, and they're like, okay, we got to start getting guys in here. To start banging.
They
out
probably waved this saying, sure, you guys can have that, it's fine. But you start taking a lot of their bread.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of it really depends on like where they are, because you know, unions only have so much space, and they're also losing guys too at the same time.
I have an example of that a mentee of mine actually got into that, where he got onto a job site of full subdivision that was ran by union. He was a carpenter, they allowed him to build one, then the next, but then out. The carrot was there. We'll give you another one. But then ultimately he was cornered and he had to assign to the union. I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if these companies that are given companies, not an individual, giving that same type of opportunity get pushed into the corner and have to sign their company as a.
Well, the other thing, like,
you know, it's just a funnel system.
Just a little bit on the unions. I know some guys who were like small companies and they started paying into the union because they were expected to get more work from that. But what ends up happening is it's kind of like you got to look at it from a business side of things, okay? Am I going to give work to the guy that just started paying me? Or am I going to give work to the guys that have been paying me for a decade? Two decades.
My thought process is the guys that have been there.
That's what I mean. And so it's just kind of one of these things that even entry level, trying to get, like even if I wanted to go union, I wouldn't get the work right off the bat. I'd still have to hustle on the side. I'd just be paying them now.
Yeah, it's in it for me.
I think all you can do is that, I honestly, I'm in agreement with you, where it's like the private custom resi small to medium sized construction company.
Reach out to them.
Is doing a lot better than the bigger boys, but the bigger boys are getting all the funding. So all you got to do is just focus on, just keep on multiplying what's happening on.
I love what Jonathan brought forward. And this is what I'm doing with the Constructors Guild is we're crowdsourcing the geniuses so that we can then open source the genius to our community.
Yeah. I also think the construction worker now walks around with a lot more knowledge than they used to. Mm-hmm. I also think you can produce a lot more with less individuals.
Absolutely. Yep.
Because
we used to do it 30, 40 years ago.
Exactly. Because the thing is like, okay, you can have a bricklayer crew of 15 on a subdivision, but that's 15 guys now that you got to watch to make sure all the details are hit, all the heights are hit, all that type of stuff, right? But if you have five really good guys, you're not fixing the mistakes from the 15. And the thing is with the way technology is, because now we got Zoom booms, we're not roping and pulling anymore. I do sometimes. But like I said, you know, there's a lot of different things that make construction a lot more efficient and people are able to produce a lot more. It's crazy, but like I roll my tools in the back of my truck. Don't break into my truck. But it's literally, I keep all the most useful stuff in the back of my truck and I can do a lot of work with a small package of tools.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So
wrapping up, guys, you guys want to share some final thoughts before we close it up?
I'm going to share this thought. I'm grateful for this conversation today because it was fucking explosive. So thanks to all of you.
Yeah. No, well, Mark is the one that started it. So
my final thought is just like, if anybody's out there, like kind of in that survivability mindset, like you're not alone. A lot of really successful people start there. That's where we all start. And then we just have to move through the motions. So, you know, whoever is listening to this, if this helps you in any way on a mental state, like just understand, like we've been through the shit. Yeah. We know what it's about. Like you're not alone in that. And just, you know, keep on pushing and start making that space, making that mental space.
Thank you, Mark. You know, thank you for bringing the energy, the knowledge, the wisdom, and just the vulnerability to share everything you've learned. I appreciate that. I appreciate you. Thank you, gentlemen, for continuing these conversations because this is the shit that matters. This is what makes a difference out there.
It got me thinking what you guys just said right now about, what is it, Charles Bukowski? Is it Charles Bukowski?
You've said this before. We've had a conversation. You mentioned him before.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I'm butchering his last name. But he was talking about how in the construction sector, I feel that everybody who's speaking shouldn't be speaking, and everybody who's not speaking should be speaking.
Well, that's very intelligent. That's
too many people are speaking that shouldn't be speaking, and not enough people that are not speaking should be speaking.
Yeah,
I think what we're experiencing is the yes men telling the higher ups yes, and this decay that we're seeing from the top down is a byproduct of that.
Yeah,
and eventually, like all things, we'll return to the earth and new things will be built up.
It's going
to
end.
And I'd like to see it in my lifetime.
I hope so too.
me and you both.
Share the details again and then we'll get out of here.
Gianluca Pascale, you can find me on LinkedIn or you can also visit the Constructors Guild at constructorsguild.com.
Mark from Craigmore Construction. It's Craigmore_construction. That's our IG.
Jonathan Sinelli, People First Leadership. Google me. I'll show up. www.jonathansinelli.com. 416-717-4139. I always share my telephone number. I use that purposefully. I'm here for you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Great show.
That was awesome.
Love it. Thank you. Righty, Angelina.